Good morning. My name is Sarah Shelkey, attorney registration number 42077, counsel for the appellant Father T.M. May it please the court. It is well established in this state and in this country that parents have a fundamental liberty interest in the care, custody, and management of their children. State legislature can, however, on a rational basis, define the times in which and the manners through which the state may override or disrupt that familial relationship. Colorado's legislature did just that with Section 19.3.102 of the Children's Code. But the law also directs, and constitutional principles also reaffirm, that continued disruption of this constitutionally protected relationship is permissible only when one of the grounds or bases specified and approved of by the state legislature exists. In the present case, the trial court presented the jury.
Well, let me stop you there. You're referring to a constitutional amendment that requires a court case that requires a real time rather than an historical focus.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I
don't. Well, okay. The statute, and specifically 19.3.102 paren 1 paren a paren, is framed in the past tense, has subjected him or her to mistreatment.
That finding, correct, is
okay.
In the past.
Are you saying that there is a court decision that requires a real time as contrasted with an historic assessment before the state can interfere with the parent-child relationship? And if so, what case is that?
Thank you for that clarification, Your Honor. The argument is not that a court case has ruled it has to be present. What the constitutional argument is that there has to be a rational basis to interrupt the relationship. That's the foundation to start with. Here, it has to be by statute. In the present case with 19.3.102, all of the sole seven statutory findings that can be made to adjudicate a child dependent and neglected, six of them are in the present tense. One, the subjected to past mistreatment or abuse, is in the past tense. And what that reflects is the General Assembly's determination, presumably, that subjecting a child to past mistreatment or abuse is sufficiently controlling or sufficiently strong foundation to have past events have a conclusive bearing on the present status of the child.
Is it your argument that that fails a rational basis inquiry?
No, it is not. The argument, Your Honor, is that the trial court changed two of the statutory bases provided in 19.3.102 without the blessing of the General Assembly and in contravention of decades of dependency and neglect case law, which has repeatedly confirmed the rule that state intervention into the familial relationship must be limited to instances where the child's present status immediately demands it, or it must be limited to the instances specifically defined by the state in the statute.
Aren't there cases which indicate that past neglect can be a basis for inferring a present tense environment injurious to the child? Aren't there cases that say that?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yes. So the fact that there is a instruction worded in the past tense doesn't preclude the conclusion that the status of the child now would be that the child would be dependent neglected if it were to be returned to the
Certainly,
parent.
Your Honor. The issue is not... the appellant is not arguing under any circumstances that past events are irrelevant to the present status determination. There is a distinction that needs to be made with respect to the seven statutory findings in 19.3.102, in that the state legislature selected the verb tense to be used.
Okay, I cut the chip. Are you saying that because the jury was instructed only on B and C, which are framed in the present tense, that's the problem? And if the jury had been instructed on A, which is framed in the past tense, it wouldn't be a problem?
Certainly, Your Honor, that is one facet of the argument. I cannot speak for the people as to why the subjected to past mistreatment or abuse finding wasn't included in there. But that is a problem.
Okay, but you're basically saying that the tense in the jury instructions is at odds with the tense in the statute, and we don't have to go any further to find an instructional error of significant magnitude.
Correct, because the instructions don't mirror the statute, and the...
And was that preserved below?
Yes.
With the level of specificity we're now discussing?
Yes, Your Honor.
Let me ask you this, because remember there was a question, and I think it's clear the tense is not in sync with the statute. The question is, why is it of significance?
Your Honor, the reason it's significant is because the goal after the adjudication is that we take the jury's findings and we formulate an appropriate treatment plan. The jury's findings, as made, literally make it impossible to formulate an appropriate treatment plan. Right now, the jury's findings as made are essentially as follows, that at some point in the past, some sexual abuse occurred at the hands of somebody, and at that time, the child lacked proper parental care and was in an injurious environment. It would be impossible for a trial court or anybody to fashion an appropriate treatment plan to remove a child from that status. It's
Why?
Not even a status.
Why, if the evidence centered on basically that the child had been put in an injurious environment while placed with father, why would it be impossible to come up with a treatment plan that is tailored to the evidence in the case?
Your Honor, because the evidence was conflicting in the case, and there could have been multiple grounds upon which that the jury thought the child lacked proper parental care, which may not have even involved the father in the sexual abuse.
Aren't you arguing there should have been more special interrogatories given? Isn't that always the case? Even if it were in the present tense, how would that remedy the situation you just described? If it's in the present tense, how does that tell the trial court how to make an appropriate treatment plan for something father did?
Your Honor, if it was in the present tense, it would alleviate the other issue or problem that emanated from the changing of the tense in these, which is the compelled finding. When you consider the definition and common sense notions of an injurious environment. For example, if you ask a jury, was the child in an injurious environment? At that point, so long as the jury comes to the conclusion that the child was injured ever, then that child was in an injurious environment. It doesn't matter who the perpetrator was. It's not specific to who the perpetrator was.
You're not asking, though, and you didn't ask for more specific findings, did you, in this case or in this appeal? You didn't ask for more specific findings that the injurious environment was caused by dad.
No, I did not, Your Honor.
Right. So again, even if it were in the present tense, how does that reflect upon the issue you're raising that, well, wait a minute, you can't put together an appropriate treatment plan? Even if just the generic questions were answered by the jury, how does that affect your argument about you can't put together an appropriate treatment plan?
Yeah, I think that I apologize, I don't have a more compelling response, but there are so many issues that came out of the decision to put those in the past tense that I can't even predict really whether, you know, it would be that much easier then. I can't say, you know, if it had been in the present tense, maybe if I hadn't been so distraught about it in the past tense, I would have asked for more specific findings. There wouldn't have been the issue with if proper parental care means the minimum level of care necessary to prevent threats to the child's welfare. Well, if there was a threat to the child's welfare, and that wasn't prevented. It, by being in the past tense, everything is compelled. It literally takes the fact-finding from the jury, and they just get to say, if an injury occurred, it has to have been an injurious environment. If a threat wasn't prevented to the child's health or welfare, then that wasn't proper parental care.
But let me try this different approach and maybe simplify this. Where in the statute is the court required to track the jury's answers to special interrogatories in formulating a treatment plan? And the analogy I would suggest is, in a criminal case, the jury determines guilt. but the judge can impose sentence based on essentially, at a minimum, anything that came out in the evidence, and probably anything, as a practical matter, just about anything else. So where does the statute limit the treatment plan to particular findings of the jury?
Your Honor, I don't believe that the statute does.
Well, isn't that your argument, though, that the disconnect between the past, the problem is in part the disconnect between the past tense instructions and formulating a treatment plan?
The problem lies in the fact that the findings as made don't give anything as to the child's status, and that
present status.
Present status, correct. I mean,
okay, but let's assume that I apologize for, I'll defer to your greater knowledge of the record. Let's assume the child's been in foster care for 18 months, which isn't unusual in cases of this nature. The jury can't assess the jury can't assess the child's present environment as a barometer of how the parent treated the child. So doesn't it have to be historical?
Correct, but it is more that, Your Honor, the adjudication is made with respect to each parent. The treatment plan that's going to come out of that adjudication is going to be formulated for that parent based on the findings that are made as to the child's status.
Wait a minute. I thought we just agreed a minute ago that nothing in the statute required the court to use the jury's findings in formulating a treatment plan.
That's correct.
Okay, and didn't you just say the opposite, that the treatment plan has to reflect the jury's findings on the status of the child?
I apologize, Your Honor, if I stated like that. What I'm trying to say is the treatment plan isn't going to be appropriate unless it is one that takes steps to remove the child from the dependent and neglected status. In the present case, we don't know anything about the child's status. We know nothing about the child's status. And the juvenile court's jurisdiction depends on that status. The statutes are based on the status determinations. And when we directed it solely into the past, it confused the issue. This can be illustrated even, you know, with right, what's going on right now. Right now,
Counsel, you have about two and a half minutes left, I think,
on
your argument.
Your Honor, what's happening right now is the parties are continuing to heavily litigate in the post-adjudication context what the child's status is, of what dad needs to do to improve himself to remove her from the dependent and neglected status. The people are pushing heavily for him to have to go to sex offender management board certified treatment, which of course provides, among other things, that he's going to have to admit to having sexually abused his daughter.
Okay, but how is that problem a consequence? And it may be a huge problem, a diminution. How is that problem a consequence of how the jury's special verdict, essentially, was formulated?
Yeah, I think that the example I just provided is more a consequence of the fact that the people failed to include, as one of the interrogatories, A, from 1930.
You didn't raise that issue, though, below, did you?
Yes, I did.
Oh, you mean you argued that the jury should have been instructed on paren A?
No, Your Honor, I argued that that the people were including it. Sorry, I suppose I didn't include subsequent to that it should be added, but there was discussion about why it wasn't in there. And the people dropped the issue. And the way that this is indirectly connected to the example I just provided is that when I objected to the adding of the mistreatment or abuse finding, when it wasn't included in the original petition, the people dropped it and said they wouldn't include it. Since then, in a way, it's as though the people attempted to reintroduce that finding by switching the other two to the past tense. And in doing so, it confused the issues. It may very well have compelled jury verdicts against TM. And we really have no idea of the scope of it beyond the fact that it doesn't mirror the statute. State intervention has to be limited to the instances that are defined by statute, and this wasn't. Thank you.
Counsel, how much time is left? I think we'll up that to about a minute and a half, you know, for rebuttal.
My name is Jennifer Stewart. I represent the people of the state of Colorado. Sitting next to me is Nancy Walker Johnson. She's the guardian ad litem. And I'm sorry, I forgot to state my state bar number, which is number 36985. Nancy Walker Johnson is also the guardian ad litem. She has indicated that if you have any questions for her, that I can reserve some time. So if the court has any questions for her, I'm happy to reserve some of my time so that she may present her argument as well.
So how is it that we, you know, deviate from the language of the statute and the language of the pattern instructions or the pattern verdict forms? How is it that we can do that, especially if we don't want to take the suggestion in the trial court that you could have had a supplemental instruction explaining this temporal issue or explaining away the confusion for temporal for problems?
Your Honor, the judge decided.
I'm asking you, you know, why we can do this.
So I think in case law, the statute, in order to serve the legislative intent, can be interpreted in either a past tense or a future tense, and I believe that the case in the interest of DLR recognizes that, but it says that in determining whether a child is dependent or neglected, future harm may be considered. And so you can consider when then looking at the 19.3102 subsections, the future, I don't want to say the future tense, but the child will be in an injurious environment, or that the child may lack in the future.
Was the jury instructed in that way?
The jury did receive an instruction to the interest of DLR. Yes, there was one. I believe there was an instruction.
So the jury received an instruction that in determining whether a child is dependent and neglected, you can consider the possibility that the child would face future harm.
Yes.
Where can you point to me an instruction that is the wording is in the present tense in determining whether a child is dependent and neglected?
In the definitions, Your Honor, of the injurious environment and the definition of lacking proper parental care, both of those definitions were as the Colorado jury instruction defined it. So the the lacking proper parental care was that a minimum level of care required to prevent any serious threat to the child's health or welfare. And so that instruction was given in total, and the same for the injurious environment. A child's environment is injurious to her welfare when all of the following exist. The environment has been causing injuries to the welfare of the child. The environment is under the control of or subject to change by the child's parent, and the environment is sufficiently injurious to the child's welfare that any reasonable parent would act to change it. So both of those definitions were put in the present tense and were not changed to the past tense. And so the jury, in determining the special verdict instructions, were given those definitions. And so when deciding lack of proper parental care, they were deciding based on the jury instruction the minimum level of care needed to that a parent needed to provide to prevent serious harm or to their health or welfare, and the same for the injurious environment, that in order to make the decision whether the child had an injurious environment, all of these subsections of injurious environment needed to be found, including was the environment under the control of the parent, and would a reasonable person would have changed it, whether a reasonable person would have changed it. And so those two instructions partnered with the special verdict instruction gave the jury a sense of what they were to determine, which was while the child was in the care of the parent, was the child's environment injurious? And while the child was in the care of the parent, did the child lack proper parental care? So we were specifically identifying what environment we were talking about and who the environment was in control of.
But was the jury given an instruction to the effect that either of those problems would persist if the child was returned to the custody of the respondent father?
I think when we gave the instruction in the interest of DLR that future harm may be considered, that yes, the jury was given that instruction as well, that future harm then could be considered. So if the child were to be returned, would be the next logical step.
Future harm could be considered with respect to what?
Whether a child, in determining whether a child is dependent or neglected. So I think that was the phrase that was used. Yes.
Future harm may be considered.
Yes.
Bring to the special interrogatories, ask whether the child was dependent. So how does future harm link up to that special interrogatory?
I think when it's read in conjunction with all of the other instructions, so when it's read in conjunction with the definition of proper parental care, and when it's read in definition of the injurious environment, plus the special verdict form, I think the jury is presumed to have understood all of the instructions, and I believe that that would be how that situation was remedied. Since the court, since there was evidence on the child's current status in the foster home and how the child was doing in the foster home, the argument is that if the jury were to decide whether the child is in or is in an injurious environment, or whether the child lacks proper parental care in the present tense, then the jury has to make that decision based on where the child is currently, which is under the state's care. And I don't think that doesn't determine the status of the child in response to the parent and the parent's actions, because the parent doesn't have any control over that environment at that point in time of the adjudication, and that parent doesn't have control over the care that the child is receiving while in the state's care at the time of the adjudication jury trial. So it's important to make sure that the instructions are clear to the jury of what environment we are specifically talking about and what care, parental care, we are specifically focusing on. I believe that there's also case law that in other cases where the jury has found that the child lacked proper parental care or that the child was in injurious environments, in the interest of AEL, in the interest of CAK, in the interest of MW, and People versus the TRW and TLW, all four of those cases, the jury or the fact finder, because I think one case was a judge, made the decision based on the past tense of that 19.3102 subsection 1, subsection B and C, that the court, therefore, then the trial court has a reasonable basis to believe that that can be interpreted in the statute defining status, which was 19.
Ask you about those cases. Was there any facts recounted with specificity, like as in either the special verdict forms are recounted in the past tense, or the trial court makes a finding with quotes to indicate that the trial court made the finding at the time of adjudication that in the past tense, as opposed to it comes up here and we may have characterized it as the trial court found that the child, as of that time, lacked proper parental care?
Your Honor, I believe that two of the cases specifically do that. In the interest of AEL, the court cited that the jury unanimously found that both children were dependent and neglected because they lacked, so they put in subparagraph one, lacked proper parental care based on the mother's actions and omissions, and two, that the environment that she provided was injurious to their welfare. So that was a reference to the jury's unanimous finding, and that People versus TRW and TLW, the Court of Appeals said the jury was properly instructed as to the circumstances to be considered in determining whether the children's environment was injurious to their welfare. The jury was further instructed that it could infer all the dependence and neglect, hearing that a non-abused child lacked or will lack proper parental care from evidence establishing mistreatment of other children. And so that was also taken from the instructions that the jury had received. When taking all of the jury instructions in this case as a whole, and in looking at other cases that have decided this issue, I believe the status of the child in this case was appropriately determined, and that the status was found under 19.3.102 that even though there was a past tense reference in the special verdict form, the status could still be determined of the child that the state was seeking to intervene. In reference to the opposing counsel's inference that the jury was required to find with a past tense verdict or a jury instruction that if a child receives any type of injury, then of course, in the past, then of course the case is that the child is in an injurious environment. We argue that that's not true, that you have to find in an injurious environment that the child not only was injured, but that the environment was in control of the parent, and that a reasonable person would have acted to change it. And so the jury has to make all three of those decisions. And so the jury has to find that the parent in this case had control over that environment of that child, and that a reasonable parent would have acted to change it. So again,
Was the jury given a special interrogatory on what a reasonable parent would do?
No, I do not believe so.
But was there, did she reference reasonable parent?
Yes, it did. But I believe that the jury can make that determination, and that was also not brought up. No instruction was asked for as to what a reasonable parent would do, or a reasonable person would do. And the same goes for a lack of parental care. There is a specific definition that the jury must find that the minimum level of care required to prevent any serious threat to the child's health or welfare. Again, this definition requires that a parent be able to prevent any serious threat. So if a child were harmed in some way, or if there's a serious threat to the child's health or welfare, the parent still has to be able to prevent it. And the jury was, again, given that definition. And so there's not a automatic assumption that if a child is harmed, the state can intervene. We still have to find the level of care provided by the parent meets that definition, that the parent has the ability to either prevent or not prevent, makes the determination. And so it's not an automatic, I guess, is what I wanted to emphasize regarding that. The only other case that I wanted to provide to this court was in the interest of IS. And that case stated that with regard to proceedings in neglect and dependency, the General Assembly has declared that to carry out the purposes of the Children's Code, its provisions must be liberally construed to serve the welfare of the children and the best interests of society. Thus, the court should avoid any technical reading that would disregard the best interests of the child. In this case, the technical reading of 19.3.102 would not serve the best interests of the child, and it would restrict the intent of the legislature to make sure that the state can intervene when there has been past harm due to a parent's either failure to prevent that harm or failure to change that environment. So we believe that here in the jury instruction, the special verdict instruction, that the instruction was an appropriate statement of law so that it can serve the best interests of the children and society.
So your time has expired. Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel. Half, did we say? Minute and a half, sorry.
Thank you, Your Honors. I do just want to quickly correct from counsel's response to some of the questions. The reasonable person instruction was requested. Respondent requested that several times and argued that that would at least provide the jury with some clarification in this past tense context, if that were where we were going to be stuck. So that was incorrect. Also, there is no case law that exists, and my brain almost exploded reading all of the cases, that directly offers excerpts from the special verdict form or puts in quotation marks an instance where the lower court put the statutory findings into the past tense. There's none. There's absolutely none. And the arguments that have been proffered by the people and the GAL, contending that it's merely a technical violation and these appellate cases, because they discussed it in the past tense, indicate that it's commonplace, are disingenuous arguments, because that's not the case at all. What the trial court did was it modified the statute, and it did so without the blessing of the General Assembly.
And counsel, then it's your argument that the legislature has spoken in plain language and there's nothing to interpret.
Yes, Your Honor. It is a plain reading of the statute, and in fact, the fact that subsection A is placed in the past tense would lend to the inference that the General Assembly considered putting the other findings in the past tense, but came to the conclusion that while past acts or omissions are relevant to that status determination, they were not so strong as past mistreatment or abuse as to be presently controlling. They are relevant, but not presently controlling. And the trial court superseded that decision and inserted its own interpretation instead.
You're out of time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you both, counsel, for your arguments. The case will stand submitted. An opinion will issue in due course.